Yo, welcome ladies and gentlemen to another episode of the Progressive Being Podcast. I'm here with my guest today, Mr. Williams, man. He's excited, I'm excited, we're both excited to be here. Chris hitting me up and actually wanted to be a part of the podcast. I didn't have to go seek him or anything like that. He came to me, and I was so flattered by that, man. And I'm just grateful that he came and wanted to be on the podcast as a guest. I had no prior knowledge to who Chris was as a young man or what his dreams or ambitions or ideas were, but he hit me up with a quick synopsis to get a better understanding of who he was and his journey, man. So I got Chris here. Chris, you got the stage. Why don't you holler at the people and let them know what's good?
All right. What's up? So my name's Chris Williams. I'm from Carrollton, Georgia. Hoops is my passion. I'm a sophomore here at Asbury University in Kentucky. I'm a media communications major. Some of my other hobbies are writing, philosophy, and I like studying biomechanics. Fun fact about me is I want to write a book eventually. So some people like to write, but I kind of want to make some money off of it. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Man, we could do like a whole bunch of episodes on that. That's sick. Like, that's crazy. Like, wow, you're interesting, bro. We've been talking for like a minute.
Yeah, I wouldn't be well rounded.
Okay. Yeah, that's what's up, dude. Like, I'm actually looking into writing a book as well later on, man. Like, I have some ideas, but I don't know specifically what I'm going to, like what the book is going to be about. So I might have to write a bunch of books. I got so many ideas. But, man, that's awesome, man. What kind of book you trying to write?
I'll probably write, so the thing that I sent you, I'll probably just turn that into a book eventually. Once I'm a professional basketball player. Because now with, like, college eligibility, I can't make any money off of it because that makes me ineligible.
Right.
But it just kind of is what it is. So I'll probably start doing some writing while I'm in school and then probably look for a publisher and stuff like that once I get the funds to be able to do that.
Ooh, that's what's up, man. That's ill. Already sound like you got some plans for the future. That's what's up, man.
Yeah, I mean, I used to write a ton when I was younger. I would write like 70, 80 pages at like 10 years old. Writing was like passion before basketball.
Dude, that's a hell of a passion, dude. Writing that many pages at that age, that's pretty sick, man. That's pretty unique.
Yeah, I don't even know where it comes from. I think it's just a natural God-given talent.
That's cool, man. That's not bad at all, dude. I'm a geek, dude. Like, I love reading. I just love digging into books and things like that, man. Like, even, you know, we got this technology nowadays, you know, you can read things online and on your phone. I like holding the book. I'm still old school like that. Is reading different things, man. So what do you like to read, man?
I pretty much, most of the time, it's either about basketball, philosophy, or biomechanics. Okay. That's pretty much for the most thing. Like, I usually use biomechanics so I can improve my game with basketball. And then philosophy, just so I can learn how to live. I mean, life is tough. When you're 19, it can seem like a lot. So being able to get into philosophy and kind of dig into some of the ideas that like people before me thought that you should live and testing some of those out. I'm just working on being really self-aware. So knowing what I like and knowing what I don't like, knowing what I'm good at, knowing what I'm not good at. I think that's a really good thing to have. A lot of people my age don't have that.
No, not at all. So yeah. And I was actually going to mention that, like, people, you say you're 19,
yes,
right?
19.
Yeah. That's pretty young, man. It's like, oh, you're trying to, you know, the way you talking, that's grown man talk right there, dude. For real. So you're trying to get a grasp of who you are and how to live a better life and things like that. Dude, that's deep, man. That's really deep. That's awesome. I like that. Cool, man. Any like specific philosophers you look up to or anything like that?
None in particular. I listen to this YouTube channel called the Academy of Ideas, and they talk about a ton of philosophers. Like every video is like a different philosopher, like a couple philosophers. But I don't really have like a favorite in particular. I just kind of like digging into stuff. I just like to think, I like to learn. And that channel really stimulates my mind and gets me going.
Oh my God, bro. Like I said, season two, man, I started off, man, with, you know what I'm saying? You know the boy, we all
yeah,
roses.
My guy.
I had him on, I had my homegirl. Yeah, that's my dude. I had my homegirl, Amanda. I had my dude that I trained, Zuhair. And now I got you, Mr. Williams, and all you guys, I'm saying, I don't know what it is with this season, but you guys are killing it, dude. Like, you guys are killing it, man. I mean, we've been talking not too long, and I'm just feeling your vibe. Like, I love that you're a young cat, and you just trying to learn. You saying that you love to learn. Like, I try to preach that to people, man. Like, no matter what age you're at, like, be thirsty to learn. It doesn't have to be something specific, but just try to learn something. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like something every day. Keep growing your mind. You sound like that young man, man. That's cool, dude. That's cool, man. Congrats on that.
I appreciate that. I mean, I just feel like, I feel like life is just about experiences. And I mean, if you can get more of those, you can learn, because I'm big on connections. Like I'm big on social media, getting on, just meeting strangers. The world's a big place. There's more people than just the people that are in your area. So I just try to get out and meet people. So
definitely, I agree, man. I agree, and that's one of the beauties of social media, man, is getting to know people that might live in a different state or even a different country. You know what I'm saying? That's pretty cool, man. I like that, man. It's one of the biggest ups about social media, man. But you said in school, you're majoring in philosophy and bio. What was it?
Oh, no, I'm majoring in media communications. So
media communications. But those are biomechanics, philosophy, just something you do on the side, or you just like to study?
Something I like to do on the side. So, like, I transferred here from LaGrange College in Georgia. When I was there, I was an exercise science major, actually. And I was thinking about doing strength and conditioning. But then, like, the intro to exercise science class sucked. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And then strength and conditioning, they don't really make any money for the most part. And I mean, I know you shouldn't really choose your job based on money, but like we all got to survive and money helps you survive. So like, I don't really want to have like a PhD and I'm making like 30K or something like that. I was kind of like, why should I pay the school 40K to learn something I can learn on Google? Like I research a ton of biomechanics stuff. And then philosophy, there's not really any jobs out there for that. So,
yeah, definitely not, man. That's something definitely you could learn on your own and just read books. Like you say, you are on YouTube learning as well. And that's crazy you mentioned that, like paying a school all that money, you know what I'm saying, with something you could do by yourself pretty much. You know, you could sell yourself. That's crazy, man. And you just spending all that money. That's a smart dude, man. And nowadays, like you said, we got Google, we got YouTube. You know what I'm saying? We got libraries, which are free. All you need is that that drive. You know what I'm saying? You just need that drive to get up and go. You know what I'm saying? Even if you're a lazy dude, like I said, we have YouTube and Google. It's right on your phone. You know what I'm saying? All you do is type in something, type in a question, and you can learn right there on the spot. So that's pretty cool, man. So, my dude, let's get into this, because sent me the link. You know what I'm saying? I want to get into the gritty-gritty. Because you sent me this link, man. And I, you know, and for people who don't know what this link is, I was asking my man, Chris, he wanted to be on the podcast, and I was like, okay, cool, man. Just wanted to know a little bit more about him, you know what I'm saying? So we could see what the podcast episode is going to be about, and just to get a better feel of Mr. Williams. And he's like, all right, man, I got you. So he sent me a link. I opened this link, and this link is long as hell. It was a long ass read. And I say that in a positive matter. I'm not saying that in a negative matter. I'm saying that like, okay, this is awesome. Like it was incredible. I didn't expect that. I'm expecting like a sentence or two or maybe a paragraph. No, it was a long ass read. It was interesting. I'm like, wow, this is cool. This kid's deep. You know what I'm saying? He had a hell of a journey, struggle, but he just kept going. It's awesome. So enough of me talking. Let's dig into that. What's up with that? Let's get into that journey, baby. It was good.
Pretty much, I guess I'll keep it short because, like you said, the link was pretty long. So,
brother, you can keep it as long as possible. We talking now. Go ahead, man.
Okay.
We're getting into it now.
I guess I'll go ahead and get started. So, I used to want to play football when I was like 12, 13. And then, got a couple good licks. And then I started thinking, like, is this really for me? And then I wanted to be an NFL quarterback, and I used to watch like NFL Network and stuff like that. And then I saw like one time they were talking about like NFL rookie quarterbacks. I have to remember like 700 plays or something like that. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. they have to remember like a ton of stuff. Like it's crazy. Like, you basically have to be a genius to be a professional athlete, especially as a quarterback. Now I started thinking, I was like, I want to be really good. For some odd reason, I've always had this drive to be like, just to get better at stuff. So for football, I was like, as a quarterback, how can I practice by myself? Like, I don't have anybody to throw the ball to. I don't have receivers to run routes or like anybody to like help me work on my footwork and stuff like that. So I was like, guess I'll try basketball. Started out playing basketball, I'll say maybe like seventh grade. It wasn't too good. All I could do was, I was kind of like super clumsy. All I could do was like play defense for the most part. And then eighth grade, I started playing rec basketball. That's like when I started to see Well, I guess I'll go before eighth grade. So pretty much, my dad, we were talking like in the front yard one day, and he was like, do you want to try out for the team or do you want to play rec? I was like, I don't really know. I wasn't super confident because I've only been playing for like a year. So I was like, I guess I'll try rec.
Yeah.
And my work ethic when I was younger, like, it was crazy. Like, it makes me look lazy now. But like now I've just been able to work a lot smarter. Like I used to do like 500 crossovers, 250 between the legs, 250 behind the back. I would dribble with two balls for 10 minutes a day. But like when you're young, you're just trying to like just push out as much as possible. You're not really thinking about like overuse and stuff like that. So for eighth grade, I played rec, like I said. This is when I started realizing like I'm pretty athletic. But I didn't really know what to do with it. So I was pretty much playing like way out of control. Like I was fast, but like my body just wasn't used to moving. Like it was just natural athleticism. So like I was jumping over people and like running by people. I didn't have any real skills. I had maybe like three dribble moves in the bag, all going right. I started to get a little bit into the NBA. Manu Ginobili was my favorite player. For the most part, yeah, he was my favorite player. I didn't really know anybody else in the NBA besides him. The Spurs are my favorite team. So yeah, Manu Ginobili was my favorite player. I tried to model my game after him. So pretty much every time I call the ball in practice, I'm trying to go left because he's left-handed. Like I'm driving left, even though I'm right-handed. I'm driving left, trying to finish left, pass left, anything with the left hand. Right. Well, besides jump shots. Jump shots I'm taking with my right hand, but I couldn't really shoot back then. So I played rec. We went 9-1, I think. Yeah, 9-1. And then ninth grade came, I was a little bit better. I was super nervous at tryouts. Like, it was bad. I remember one time it was like a 2-on-1 and I was dribbling. And I was like running down and I dribbled the ball off my foot and it went out of bounds. And I was like, oh man, this might not be for me. I might want to reconsider what sport I play. So ninth grade, I didn't make the team. I didn't make first cut actually. It's pretty tough. But like, I kind of knew I wasn't, like even if I was on the team, I knew I wasn't going to get a ton of minutes. I knew I wasn't that good. So yeah, pretty much ninth grade, I ended up being the manager for the ninth grade basketball team. I would travel.
How was that though? Like just being a manager. I mean, let's talk about that just for a minute, and you could continue. Because man, like I said, your story is interesting, dude. When I was reading it, like you went out to play ball, and you just ended up. I mean, you didn't make the team, but you were team manager. You know, carrying those heavy ass jerseys and stuff like that, and water bottles. I mean, how did that affect you, like mentally or even emotionally? Like, how were you feeling? Like, were you proud to do that? Like, oh, at least I'm a part of the team.
For me, it was kind of like, well, at least I'm not sitting at home. I have something to do after school. Like, you know, I'm not bored. But another part was like, I'm way better than these guys. Like, it just, like, watching other people do something that you think you should be doing can turn you into an animal. Like, it can drive you up a wall. Like, it can break you or it can make you. I feel like I mean, it broke me at certain times, like when I first started out, and then people would, like, make jokes and stuff like that. Cause like, even though I wasn't that good, I was kind of cocky. So like, I would talk smack to the varsity players and like the ninth grade players and be like, yeah, like none of y'all are better than me. Like none of y'all are working harder than me. Yeah. I mean, it's humbling, but it also teaches you a lot. Right. You get to see like the ins and outs of basketball, like in the locker room and how coaches respond to certain things. And it kind of helps you.
I mean, that's optimism right there. Yeah. I mean, that's a good, you know, good attitude to have. I'm pretty sure it wasn't your ideal position. You trying to go out to actually be on the court and you end up, you know what I'm saying, doing that. But you being, you know, just having that optimism, man, and just being optimistic about the situation. That. I mean, that's kudos to you, man.
I guess I'll just go into 10th grade football.
Sorry, I just had to.
So my football team, we had like this film crew that would just record the games and stuff like that. So I did that. That was super fun, like traveling with the football team, going to the games, like, because before then I had like never went to like a football game ever, like high school, college, NFL, nothing like that. So it was just cool to also be a part of something else. So like, in a sense, like I wasn't doing anything like towards basketball, but I had something to do. Okay. I didn't want to just sit at home and just lay around my ninth grade year. So fast forward to 10th grade, well, ninth grade summer, like I was working like crazy. So 10th grade comes, basketball tryouts once again. This time I try to take a different approach. So I kind of sit by myself before tryouts because we had tryouts after the varsity practice. So I would get to the gym. I would just stay away from everybody else. I would go sit like in a corner and try to like meditate on what I had to do. Try to get myself angry. Just trying to get into that zone. So yeah, we have tryouts. I played terrible. I played bad. I played so bad. But like somehow I ended up making I was making every cut, and then we got to the last cut, and it was like me and then this guy named Nick Cade. He was on the ninth grade team, and like he was one of their best players. He was actually a starter. And it was like the last day, and it was like a handful of us left. And like turns out like I was the only person from tryouts to not get cut. Like everybody got cut but me. And I was like, this is crazy. Cause like I was like, there's no way I made the team over Nick. Like he's way better than me. Like there's no way. What is going on? Like I remember making one shot in tryouts. Like I don't know what they liked, but I don't know. Like yeah, maybe I did a bunch of other stuff, like small things, because I was communicating on defense and offense. But like at that time, I didn't really understand like the intangibles of basketball. I just thought it was all about like scoring and crossing people and getting dunks and stuff like that.
Right, right. A lot of people overlook that, man. Like you said, you were young and you thought it was just like about scoring and crossing people over, dunking, doing fancy stuff. And you know, a good coach, you know, they'll recognize a player even if he's not a scorer. You know how he communicates. Basketball is so big on communication. Yeah. You know, even when I'm training my one-on-one players or I run my basketball camps, I try to tell these kids, like, hey, communicate on defense and offense, and you know, make sure you're talking. Don't be quiet, move around, setting picks for people, just keep it moving.
Let's see, so 10th grade comes, I'm playing like 3 through 5 because I still don't have any guard skills. I have a little bit of a handle, but like I'm at the point where like I'm not an efficient basketball player, so like I can dribble, but I'm only dribbling in one spot. So like if I get crowded, then like it's going to be a turnover. If I get in a crowd, I'm starting to dribble my head down. I still can't shoot, and like I'm basically supposed to be a point guard in my size.
How tall are you?
Yeah, 5'10", 5'11", something like
5'10". That. Are you? You 5'10"?
People always told me I had hops, but like I didn't really know what it was. I didn't dunk actually until after my senior year.
Oh, wow.
I could jump up and like 360 without the ball and like pull on the rim. Yeah. And I like never lift it. I was actually like pretty weak. Like ninth grade, I was like 5'7", like 140.
That's natural. That's crazy.
On a good day. So, yeah, like a lot of my dad was like a three sport athlete. My cousin, Jake Crowder, plays for the Grizzlies.
That's just you.
His dad. Yeah. Yeah. He's like a fourth cousin, something like that. Or I don't think like third or fourth cousin. His dad and my dad are cousins. Yeah, Jay had an interesting story too. He was like my height, 5'10", when he graduated high school.
So he's running through the blood a little bit.
Obviously to what he is now, sits like 240. He was JUCO National Player of the Year. His dad, Corey Crowder, played for the Jazz. He was Division II National Player of the Year.
Right.
My dad, like I said, was a three-sport athlete. And then my cousin on my dad's side, his name is Jordan Bird. He plays football for San Diego State. He's a running back. Yeah, there's a couple athletes in my family.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it was definitely in the genes.
Yeah, I appreciate that. For 10th grade, I pretty much, I didn't play a lot. I played 3 through 5. It was a learning experience.
Man,
5'10" playing post. You could probably use your imagination there. A lot of stuff getting pinned on the glass and sent backwards. And then I didn't have any real skills, and like I was still new to basketball, so like anytime I touched the ball, I'd be terrified because I wouldn't know what to do with it. It's like, what's this little round bouncy thing that they keep throwing to me? It's like, what do I do with this? I started to realize like practicing in the front yard is a lot different than practicing with nine other players or playing with nine other players on the floor. So that was a wake up call for sure. 10th grade, yeah, I was kind of just like only thing I did was get rebounds
because
I had a high vertical. But like outside of that, I never really scored. I couldn't remember any of the plays because like I would get in and like black out. When I did get in, it was like usually like a blowout.
Right.
I scored one time. I scored one time that I can remember. So we were playing this school called Woodward Academy. Well, my first game was pretty terrible, but I actually scored in my first game. So Woodward Academy, we were down by like 25. And the coach is like, you're going to go in with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And I was like, all right, bet. Sounds good. So I'm just sitting there thinking, not really nervous until he calls my name. And like, I look up and I'm like, whoa, it's really 5 minutes, like 5 minutes to be out here. Like, all right, let's get to it. So like, The first thing that happens is I go up, I get a rebound, and this one kid, he's like 6'3", 6'4". I don't know why the hell he's playing JV. But he takes the ball. He basically takes the ball from me, slings me to the ground, and lays it up. I'm like, all right, I wasn't expecting that. I looked at the ref, and the ref looked at me, and I was like, all right, whatever, I'm just going to take the ball out. So then I come down, they start, like, they call this play called motion, and, like, I'm blacked out. I don't know what's going on. I'm just like, I just see colors and everything. I can, like, hear the noises, but I don't really know what's going on. And now, like, I can hear my teammates, like, screaming at me from the bench, like, where to go. Like, go this way. No, come back this way. And I'm just, like, running around. And then it's just a disaster for the most part. Yeah, you could tell I didn't play. And you could tell why I didn't play. So, for the most part, it wasn't
like a disaster.
Yeah, it wasn't a fun experience until I scored. So I actually put up two shots that game. So the first one, the other team was shooting a free throw. And the coach, like the assistant coach, he yelled at me. He was like, Chris, go down. I was like, why? He's like, I'm trying to get you a shot. I was like, all right, whatever. So like I walked down and then this guy that was playing at the time, his name is Brendan. He dribbles down. My man helps on him and he kicks it to me in the corner and I'm wide open. I'm like, all right, I shoot it and it goes like from the corner, it goes over the rim. I'm like, probably rush that one. And then I get back on defense and then the Nets moment that I remember is when I score. So I'm standing under the goal, still oblivious to what's going on, where I'm supposed to be, where am I, what sport am I playing. Probably forgot my name. So I'm standing under there. And then I remember my man like goes to double for some odd reason. And I'm like, I guess I'll just stand here. And then our point guard at the time, his name's Trayvon Reddish. He's a freshman at University of Charleston. He's like 6'4", 6'5". So like he throws me a no-look pass like from the wing to like the other block. And I catch it and I lay it up and I like start clapping. Like I was hyped. I was like, wow, this is what it feels like to score. Like I want to do this more. So yeah, that's pretty much all I remember. And then outside of that, I just got sprinkled in a couple minutes for the most part throughout the season. I didn't really do a ton more. Yeah, first 5 minutes, I kind of realized that, like, I suck at basketball. I can either quit or I can get a lot better. I guess I'll just skip on over to 11th grade. Well, actually, that summer, 10th grade, I decided to transfer from Carrollton High School to Central High School, which is a county school. Carrollton is the city school. So I transferred there. And in Georgia, if you don't move from one district to the other, you have to sit out your 11th grade year, like a varsity. So I'm basically playing JV. And like I was kind of pissed off about it at first, but I was like, it is what it is. At least I get to play. So I start 11th grade. I play post like 4 through 5. I played a little bit better because like I kind of knew what to expect from last year. But I didn't play any like for the most part besides like starting the first. I played like a couple minutes a game. So I would start like almost every game, but I don't really know why I started because I never get subbed back in after I got subbed out. I don't think I played in the fourth quarter all season.
Oh, so you started, so, played a few minutes, and they subbed you out, and you never got back in?
And then I started to realize, like, well, maybe I might be a little bit good at basketball because, like, I was starting. So, but pretty much all they had me do was get rebounds for the most part because I can jump. And then my senior year, well, that summer of 11th grade, the first practice, I, like, hurt my shoulder. I never went to the doctor for it, but I remember somebody was driving.
Right.
And I, like, stuck my hand in a strip it, and my hand got caught, and I remember my shoulder popping. I was like, that's not good. I couldn't pick up my arm for, like, a couple weeks. It wasn't good. So then I talked to the coach at the time. I'm like, I'm also working at Applebee's as a host because I had a summer job. And I was like, well, because I was basically on the edge of whether or not I'm going to make the team or not. Because they were kind of debating if they were going to cut me because I didn't really perform in 11th grade.
Okay.
So senior year was pretty much going to be my last chance if I even got one. So I come to the coach and I'm like, hey, you know, like I hurt my shoulder. I have a summer job. I'm not going to be able to play like in the summer league or anything like that. Like that's not going to be a thing. So I was like, can I just try out when basketball tryouts are? He's like, nah, if you don't play in the summer, you can't play during the season. So I was like, all right, well.
Is that a rule?
I guess that was his rule, but he didn't really stay with it because, like, people didn't play in the summer, and then they ended up making the team my senior year. Yeah, so I was like, well, it is what it is. So I don't play my senior year. I pretty much Yeah, spend the year trying to keep my grades up. Exactly. I mean, I wasn't failing or anything, but just trying to keep my grades up as high as possible to basically graduate. I ended up graduating with a 3.56. I graduated on honors. See, I graduated on honors. I'm still unsure what I'm going to do with basketball. It's like, well, do I want to quit? Everybody in my circle is telling me, like, basketball is not for you. Like, that's not, like, you had your 4 years. You didn't really do much with it. So, like, it kind of is what it is. You might as well just go to school just to go to school and be done with it. Like, college basketball is for those guys that are, you know, have the rankings and, like, they play varsity and, like, all state, all county, all region player of the year, all that good stuff. And I was like, well, you know, you might be right. So I started looking at, like, some Christian schools and stuff like that, a couple Bible colleges, and, like, just trying to get a walk-on spot there for the most part. And I couldn't really find any luck. So, like, I was just debating what I was going to do with my life. Like, am I going to play basketball or am I just going to give up?
So why even look? You said after you graduated and things like that, after everybody's saying that, oh, basketball's probably not for you, you kind of agree with them. And, you know, you're all 4 years through high school. It wasn't, you know, the most amazing, you know what I'm saying? You didn't have scouts scouting you and all that, scoring 30 points a game. It was nothing like that. It was the complete opposite. But like, after graduating, you still, like, were looking.
I feel like I had only just barely got, like, a little bit of the juice out of basketball. Like, I had got, like, a taste of what it felt like to actually be a basketball player. But for the most part, like, I never really felt like I had got everything I wanted out of basketball. I wasn't at the point where I felt like I would be burnt out. Because, like, a lot of kids, like, after high school, they're like, ooh, high school is rough. I can't imagine college. So I don't want to do that. But, like, for me, it was, like, high school basketball didn't really exist for me. Like, it was just, like, a kind of like a hobby that I did on the side. So it was just kind of like, oh, it is what it is. But a lot of people told me, if you don't play in high school, then college is going to be impossible to do. Like, that's not even, like, college coaches, they're not trying to hear any of that, like, your whole story and stuff like that. So you might as well just cut it. So I pretty much, I'm starting to look at schools. Mays Bible College was one of the schools I was going to go to. It's in Dubuque, Iowa. It's, like, super tiny. They have, like, 250 students.
Collectively
they're tiny. Yeah, they kind of emphasize that just for, like, community and stuff like that. So I kind of look at them and I'm like, all right, well, I want to go. I end up paying my deposit, but I don't go for, like, a lot of reasons. I just didn't really feel like it was a good fit for me. My parents didn't really want me going far off, so I really didn't go, or I didn't go. So I end up looking at colleges, like, in-state, because I was like, well, I don't really have the money to fly, for the most part, like, to fly out anywhere. I don't have a car to drive anywhere. So I look at LaGrange College, and I'm like, all right, well, you know, give this a shot. So I email the coaches, basically, like, hey, I didn't play a ton in high school. Like, what's the possibility of me, like, redshirting or trying out, walking on, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't get a response from anybody. Like, nobody really tells me anything. So I'm like, well, what am I going to do? One of the big reasons I chose LaGrange, my cousin, Alessa, she went there. She was going there for basketball. She was on the women's team. And I was like, well, I mean, me and her are good friends. I don't really have anywhere to go, so I might as well just go. And I wasn't going to, like, pull out of LaGrange because I wasn't playing basketball. So I was like, well, I've deposited. I have everything paid for. So I'm just going to go and just go and be a student. So I basically spent my whole year at LaGrange for the most part, not really doing much basketball outside of just training for myself. But this is, like, when the emailing starts to come in. So are you familiar with Dre Baldwin?
No.
Okay, so he's a motivational speaker. He has, like, millions of followers. He also does podcasts. I listen to him on SoundCloud, and he has, like, a YouTube channel. And his story is kind of similar to mine. Might want to check him out a little bit.
Dre Baldwin.
So I go live with him. I tell him a little bit about, like, basketball and, like, how I'm trying to walk on, because he walked on. He didn't really play a ton in high school either. He ended up playing professionally overseas in a couple countries for a couple years. So I basically tell him my story, and I'm like, well, how can I walk on? Like, what can I do? He's like, well, since you don't have any film, like, coaches, first off, are going to be turned off by you. Like, they're not even going to want to even talk to you much. So he's like, you should probably get your phone or get, like, a tripod or something like that and just record yourself playing, like, pickup and stuff like that. And I was like, I was a little shaky on it. I was like, well, that's not really, like, but, like, these other kids have varsity film, and, like, they have, like, you know, all this other film that I don't have, like, films at camp. So, like, they have these, all these reviews and stuff from college scouts, and I don't have any of that. So pretty much I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'll try it. So I started this YouTube channel, And me and my cousin Alexa, like, we just started recording me working out, just doing drills, dribbling, shooting, dunking, stuff like that. And then I just started, like, I'm like, well, I don't know, I guess I could just start emailing coaches and kind of see what happens, because Dre also recommended that. He's like, just send that out to coaches. Whatever you have is better than nothing. So I send something out to coaches. My first offer is from Bethel College in Kansas. It threw me completely off guard. I was like, what? Like, they're gonna offer me scholarship money? Like, I know it's not gonna be a full ride or anything like that, but they're gonna give me some scholarship money, like money to come play basketball, like college basketball. Like, I get a jersey and I get to travel. That was crazy. So me and the coach at Bethel, we talked for a little bit. I was kind of like I guess you could say, like, a fanboy, I guess, to the whole experience. Like, this was just so new to me. Like, I didn't know anybody who played college basketball. So, yeah, pretty much we started talking. I find out that, like, they're not really going to offer me enough money for me to be able to go there. Like, I'm still going to be looking at $15,000 out of pocket after the basketball scholarship and stuff like that. Yeah, money doesn't grow on trees, and I don't come from a family with a lot of money. So I was like, well, this is probably not going to work out. So I kind of just started emailing other coaches. I pick up another offer from Bethany College. Coincidentally, they're actually in the region or the same conference as Bethel College. But their coach, like, he was kind of, like, serious about recruiting me at first, but then he kind of just started to blow me off. He's kind of like, well, basically, he wanted me to come all the way to Kansas from Georgia to, like, basically try out or do an open gym or something like that, so they could see me, like, face-to-face. Like, the workout film just wasn't enough for him, because he was like, well, anybody can make shots when they're not being guarded, blah, 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 which is true. I mean, he had a valid point, but, like, I don't have the money to fly to Kansas. And, like, he's not going to pay for me to come to Kansas. So it's just kind of is what it is. And he's like, we would offer you a scholarship, but, like, we could find another kid at an AAU tournament and be like, we just like him better. Right. So I was like, well, all right, well, it is what it is. So then we kind of just fell off from there. It just introduced me to, like, the business of college basketball. So I just kind of took it the way it was. I mean, it was unexpected, and, like, it did hurt my feelings at the time. But, I mean, I kind of understood where he was coming from. Like, why would you take in a kid that's never even played varsity basketball over a kid that you see at an AAU tournament? I always tell people recruiting is, like, one of the hardest things people my age have to go through. It's like, because you're getting all these messages from all these different people from all over the country, promising you this and, like, telling you you're going to be this and telling you you could be this. Like, it's just kind of hard to have that discernment. So, yeah, I end up picking up more and more offers. My biggest offer came from William Penn University. They're like, this one threw me, like, completely off guard. They're like one of the top NAIA Division I schools in the country. They're like top five every year. They've been to, like, the Final Four for NAIA Division I, like, consecutive years. They won a ton of conference championships. They had a guy playing in the summer league. I can't remember his name. But, like, if you look at their roster, like, it's pretty much a bunch of Division I transfers for the most part. And, like, Division I teams won't even scrimmage them or anything like that, because they're not trying to take a L to a private school in the middle of Iowa. Like, we're not going to put that. Like, Duke isn't going to play them, because if it goes to them, it makes us look bad. So, and we got to pay them because it's exhibition. So pretty much, yeah, William Penn was I actually committed and signed to go to William Penn. But then once I started looking into it, I felt like that wasn't the best fit for me either. They had three basketball teams pretty much. So they had around, like, 70 to 80 players that would come in every year. And there's only, like, 15 varsity spots. And varsity is pretty much the only way you get seen at the NAI level, or just college basketball in general. Like, playing JV and varsity reserve doesn't really do much for you. Like, 80 people trying to compete for 15 spots. And, I mean, it's just kind of like, how realistic is that? So, like, I don't want to just be playing varsity my senior year. Yeah, for the most part, like, those schools, a lot of them are just getting Division I transfers. So, like, there may be a spot open, but then they get a guy from, like, Kansas or Kansas State, Texas Tech. Sense, or a guy from Clemson. Like, they had a guy from Virginia Tech. He was, like, 6'11". Their point guard, I forgot where he was from, but he came from Division I school. He was 6'5". Yeah, I mean, they just kind of, like, when they see Division I, they don't really think, like, he's not playing. The reason he isn't playing Division I is not for a good reason. Like, he didn't just say, like, well, no, I want to play at a lower level.
Some tall dude.
Like, he got caught doing something, or, like, his grades dropped. Like, something happened for the school not to want him. So it wasn't like a mutual thing. Like nobody just like, coach, I really don't want to play.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, how are these Division I kids, like players going down a notch? Like, why would they? You know, it's kind of weird.
Because all the schools in their conference are recruiting kids right out of high school. But like William Penn, they're getting guys that are from like Virginia Tech and like Clemson and Louisville and Fresno State. They had a guy from Fresno State. He won National Player of the Year. Like he dominated. Like he averaged like 25 and 15. Like he was just killing. But exactly.
That kind of sucks though, man. Like, I mean, that's cool and all, but what was the point for like other players like you? It's like, what chance do you guys have? And it's like, how is that cool that whatever these guys did when they were at, you know, the highest level, now they're, you know, down a level, like, shouldn't that take some precedence? Like, shouldn't that affect them in some way? They're just welcome with open arms, and then you guys take
it's crazy, because, like, I'm coming from LaGrange College, which is a Division III school, and they're also, like, pretty small. But that's just kind of how it is. Like you mentioned, politics plays a big part into pretty much everything in life, unfortunately. So basically, yeah, William Penn isn't the fit for me. I try out a couple other schools.
Unfortunately.
Like, I end up talking to coaches, but like a lot of it just ends up falling apart. It's like the biggest thing I found is either they weren't giving me enough scholarship money, or the system didn't fit me, or like the coaches, I wasn't vibing with them. So like I got offers from like schools in New York, school in Oregon, a school in Georgia. A handful of schools in New York again. I'm trying to think where else. But I ended up with 34 offers. So through that process, I had to email.
How many?
Yeah. Offers? Okay. I'm sorry. What'd you say?
How many? How many offers?
34. Dre Baldwin.
Oh, smokes, dude. That's pretty cool, man. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of offers for someone who didn't really do anything in high school. Like, that's crazy, dude.
Yeah, I appreciate that. In order to get those 34 offers, like I had to email 3,000 coaches. So like the way I did it, so I went to the library at LaGrange. I printed out all the NAIA schools, Division II and Division III schools. And I just went down the list. I was on my laptop, like I am right now. I would go to Google, type in blah, 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 university basketball roster. I was like, all right, bet. So I typed out this email. Yeah, before then, I typed out this email with like my name and like vertical jump and like my GPA and what I'm looking to do, just like a synopsis of like who I am to the coaches. So I go, like I said, type in blah 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 university basketball roster. Then I pull up, I scroll down, it has like the coaches' names and emails and stuff like that. Click, copy and paste. Most schools have like three coaches. And I emailed about 1,000 schools, so that's why I say about 3,000 coaches. Did that and waited. And then some emails came in. I got some tryout. Like, some people wanted me to come try out. And then some people just kind of blew me off completely because they're like, well, no game film. Like I say, anybody can be guarded, or anybody can make shots when they're not guarded. When there's nobody in the gym, it's easy to make a layup. It's easy to make a dunk. Like, yeah, you got a point. So I was just kind of like, well, I'm not going to force myself to go somewhere where they obviously don't want me. Yeah, some other coaches were like, well, we see some potential. Like, we see you're pretty athletic. We need a guard. Blah, blah, blah. We'll bring you in. I believe, like, I personally believe this wholeheartedly that anybody can get a scholarship offer. A lot of kids just aren't willing to take that time or just pursue what they want. Like, I'm a prime example. The varsity film, there's, like, up to this moment, there's no video of me playing with, like, a team's jersey on, scoring, defending, rebounding, anything like that. Like, there's no game film of me out there anywhere.
Dude, that's incredible that you say that, dude. Like, you're saying, like, anybody can get a scholarship, and you can apply that to so many other situations, I think, in life. Is like I said, the only thing you had, you didn't have, you know, all this tape, like, you know, dropping 40 points and 15 rebounds and 12 assists a game and doing all that, you know, making, you know, All-American basketball player. But you knew what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And even though your background wasn't that shiny, you know what I'm saying, wasn't that fancy, you just grinded, you know what I'm saying? Like you said, you emailed 3,000 freaking coaches. Dude, that's a hell of a lot of email. Like, that's, man, that's incredible, dude. And for people who listen to this podcast, that's what you got to take from this, man. That's my motto, you know, constant improvement through self-improvement, just continuing to grind no matter what. And like I said, you coming out your senior year from high school,
people telling you, hey,
you didn't do nothing in high school. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you should leave the basketball dream alone. You know what I'm saying? You didn't.
So I just go down, like, on my free time when I'm not in class, or, like, before class, or just late at night. I would just go and then, like, blank State University. Like, all right, well, I emailed them, cross them off. Just go down the list, and then eventually I end up getting through the whole list. Then I end up with 3,000. And, I mean, it was just kind of like,
right.
I mean, I did this, and I think it was like a numbers game. There's no way I'm emailing all those people and nobody, like, wants me. There's no way. Like, there's no way in hell that's happening. Like, I emailed 3,000 people and they all say no. Like, that's not even, I mean, anything's possible, but, like, that's not even a thought that's in my mind.
Right. No, I feel you. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you try to turn the tides, you know what I'm saying? Like, you try to have the cards in your favor, you know, by doing that. If you mm-hmm. would have stuck at 100, 200, you know what I'm saying, even 1,000, yeah, you might not have gotten it. What's up,
so
dude?
The last
What's
school up? I was looking at coming to before I got here at Asbury was Young Harris College, Division II school,
right.
In-state school, like 2 or 3 hours away from my house. Not too bad. I was pretty much going to go there like on a full ride, not basketball-wise, because they weren't going to give me – I was supposed to be on the JV team, so I wasn't going to be on scholarship. But I had pretty good grades. I left LaGrange with 3.0. So I got some pretty good academic money and some state money and then FAFSA money and unfortunately loans, but it's kind of a part of it. Yeah, I was kind of just – I was excited to go to Young Harris. I did everything, paid my deposit. I was looking for a roommate. I was hoping to room with one of the basketball players, but yeah. I never really got to do that because I didn't end up going there. but with Young Harris, I chose not to go because, like, their offense, like, a lot of coaches are becoming more and more analytical. So the mid-range game isn't really something that's, like, seen as a good thing anymore. And that's pretty much what I've been working on for, like, the last one to 2 years. So, yeah, pretty much shoot. So the coach said pretty much is shoot threes, free throws, so layups. And I was like, well, that's not going to fit me because I've been working on mid-range. Talked to the varsity coach. And I was like, I mean, what can I do? Like, this is my game. I don't want to completely change my game. And he was like, well, we see mid-range as, like, the worst shot in basketball. Like, it's a terrible shot. We just don't take them. Yeah, they were so against it. Like, it was ridiculous.
Dude, that's so super weird.
Yeah.
Like, who freaking says that?
And I was like, well, it was a pull, like, not being able to go there. Like, I had to struggle. I was like, should I go to Young Harris? Should I not? Like, do I really want to try to find another school this late? Like, it was, like, August.
Yeah.
So.
Pretty late.
Yeah, it was super late. I was like, I might just end up taking a semester off and then just try to find somewhere else after that. But I was like, I can't give up quite yet. Like, because I was washing dishes at the time. And I was like, I can't be washing dishes for the next 6 months while I'm working for a school. So I was like, I gotta throw something together. So I ended up finding, I had applied to Asbury, like, a year before. So I hit up my admissions counselor. I'm like, hey, what I got to do to get into Asbury? Like, I know it's super duper late, but, like, I'm not trying to take a semester off. So, like, I'm willing to do whatever I got to do. So she gives me the steps. I got to turn in, like, my transcript, my test scores, all that good stuff to get into Asbury. But I got to do that, like, super duper quick. Like, I had to do all that in, like, 3 or 4 days. So I ended up. I couldn't fly because, like, it was way too late. The flight was going to be, like, $400 or $500. I don't have a car, so, like, driving wasn't going to be a thing. My parents weren't going to take me, so I was like, well, I'm kind of out of options. So I look at Greyhound and Megabus. Greyhound is – so my option with Greyhound was going to be – I was going to have to go to Atlanta, which is, like, an hour away from where I'm at, which I was going to take an Uber there. But that was going to be 11 a.m., leave Atlanta, get to Lexington, which is, like, 15 minutes from here. Which is where UK is. I wasn't going to get to Lexington until 11:30. And I wasn't going to have a way to get from Lexington to Wilmore. So I was like, well, Greyhound's out of the question. So I looked to Megabus, and there's two options. So there's one option, which is like 3:25 p.m. to like 11:30 p.m. And that's in Megabus is taking me to Louisville, which is an hour and a half away from here. And I talked to my admissions counselor. I'm like, hey, these are my only two options. Megabus or Greyhound. And the other option for Greyhound or Megabus, I'm sorry, was from 7 a.m. to 3:25 p.m. or 3:15 p.m. So still in Louisville. So I ended up doing the 7 a.m. So I had to wake up. I had to wake up at like 4:45 a.m. because I had to get a ride to Atlanta. So I leave my house at 5, mm-hmm. and then I drive. I basically, like, I can only take 2 bags. So I have a carry-on bag and a check bag for the Megabus. So like I spent, like, the day before I left was the hardest day ever. Like, I just basically laid all my clothes out and was like, what do I not want to take? Because I can't take everything. So I just had to, like, just come up with some stuff. Like, all right, well, I might wear that. I never wear that, so I'm definitely not taking that. Like, yeah, I like to wear that shirt, so I'm going to take that too. And yeah, I need these shoes. It was tough. So I had to put all that stuff together, get all that ready.
Right.
Like I said, I ended up getting to Atlanta at like 6 a.m. I sat like in the parking lot until 7. I ended up getting on the bus. I was kind of scared, a little bit nervous, because I'd never really done like public transportation before. And I wasn't familiar with Megabus. Like, the only thing I knew about Megabus was like what I saw from like YouTube reviews and Google reviews and stuff like that. So I mean, it's the cheapest way to travel, but it's basically a bus. It's double decker. It's actually really nice. They have Wi-Fi and plugins on the bus. Like I said, it's double decker, and you could go, like, if you book early enough, you can go like cross country for like $1. Yeah, like, it's a lot of people do it. Like, people who don't like to fly, a lot of them do Megabus or Greyhound. It's better than Greyhound because, like, Greyhound has a reputation of, like, being like, nasty, or just having, like, bad customer service. But Megabus was really good. But Megabus only goes to big cities. So that's, like, Louisville is, like, the biggest city, I guess, like, in Kentucky. That so they had to go to Louisville. And Louisville's, like, an hour and a half away, like I mentioned. So I tell my admissions counselor all of this. I ended up doing all this for, like, $44 and some change. Yeah, I take the Megabus. After I tell my admissions counselor, she's like, all right, well, we'll have somebody pick you up. One of the employees, their son, will pick you up from Louisville and bring you to Asbury. So he picks me up in Louisville, and we drive an hour and a half, and then I get to Asbury. And actually, I'm, like, 2 days late to Asbury because when I get here, like, on a Wednesday, and classes started on a Monday. So I don't start classes till like Thursday. And when I start classes, I'm actually like 3 days behind. So like for the first couple weeks here, I'm like drowning in schoolwork because, yeah, it was crazy. But I ended up getting here. I would say now I'm kind of adjusted. Like, I've got my agenda and stuff planned out. And like I found a way to balance everything, like with my workouts and classes and then a little bit of social time and just being able to have like alone time to myself to like meditate and like pray and stuff like that. I'm big on meditating. Meditating for me is like the most beautiful thing in the world,
dude. That's what's up.
Like, you just kind of like,
okay,
I just use the time to meditate to think about like everything in the world. Like, I don't like try to control my thoughts when I meditate. Just like whatever happens, I just try to like calm my like soul down. Like, all right, today was a rough day, or like today was a good day, or like tomorrow was a big day, or like I'm not looking forward to doing this tomorrow, but like I just take that time to like be present. Like, all right, I'm here, I'm breathing. Like, there's people who aren't as fortunate as me. There's people like right now dying from diseases, and like there's kids that like die from cancer when they're like months old. But like I'm here, like I'm present. I'm able to like be like still be able to live and like still be able to enjoy everything that God has to offer to me. Yeah.
Dude, that's incredible, man. Sound like a very, you know, like I said, deep individual, man. You know, not a lot of 19-year-olds are meditating, you know, and for you to, like, look at other people's situations. Because I try to do that myself. Because we're humans, man. We all have tests. We go through hell and back, man. We have trials and tribulations and stuff like that. But one of the biggest things is, you know, there's someone going through worse than you. You know what I'm saying? Those are one of the things that can hold your head. Like, no matter what you're going through, like you said, there's kids that have cancer, you know.
I have so many decisions to make or decisions not to make. Like, do I graduate high school? Do I like start doing my passion and like go to college later? Or like, do I find my passion in college? Or like, when do I move out of my parents' house? Do I ever move out of my parents' house until after college? Like, do I want to buy a car? Do I want to date? Do I want to start thinking about marriage now? All types of stuff. Like, what kind of friends do I want? What kind of job do I want, like, when I'm done with college? Like, you're just thinking about all these types of things. But yeah, what got me into meditating, for the most part, I just kind of tried it out. Like, with anxiety, I was like, well, I have bad anxiety, so I'm just going to try it and kind of see what happens, and just start working. And then, yeah, I just kind of been doing it from there.
That's what's up, man. I like that, dude. I mean, you had a issue and, you know, instead of really like complaining about it or just letting it be, you try to, you know, find a solution. Like you said, you're dealing with anxiety and you're like, you know what, let me try meditation, man. And I feel like this is a solution for everything, man. You know, everybody wants the fast track, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, I have a problem, let me find the fastest solution. And I think that's the problem with people, is like, not everything is going to be solved as fast as you may like it to be, you know? And that's when patience comes in.
So like, I'll think about, like, I'll have like little moments of meditation throughout the day, but like for the most part, it's not like deep meditation until like I'm by myself alone. So
right,
so I guess I'll talk about like how I ended up being able to play basketball here at Asbury. I didn't really understand financial aid until like recently, so I would just see the sticker price and be like, whoa, probably not gonna work. So now I was at Asbury, I was like, okay, well, I still want to play basketball. So like, I just kind of went to the coach and I went to him. I was like, hey, we talked before. I'm pretty sure you don't remember me, which he didn't. But I was like, hey, I'm interested in walking on. I'm here at Asbury. I had got word that like they had over recruited some. So they had like 35 players instead of 25, which they were looking for. So I was like, okay, well, I'd be looking to walk on in the spring. Cause I wasn't looking to try to get redshirted. And also I had been struggling with shin splints, all summer. So like, yeah, I had to cut down on basketball. So man, I didn't want to be out there like right now around this time if I wasn't 100%, cause that just gives a bad first impression. So pretty much I was like, all right, well, I'm looking to walk on. And then I show him my YouTube channel. I'm like, all right, well, I'll stop by in a couple of days. You can just kind of give me word on like how you're thinking or if that's even a possibility. So I show him my YouTube channel and I come back in a couple of days and he's like, yeah, we can do walk on in January. I was like, all right, cool. So pretty much now, this whole semester, all I've been doing is like working out, just trying to polish a lot of things with my game and stuff like that. And just trying to do things where, because my goal here is to, now that I'm here, I'm looking to get a scholarship and looking to get minutes. Because, I mean, I feel like there's no other reason. Like, a lot of people see walk-ons and they think, like, oh, the guy at the end of the bench clapping. Like, the guy, you know, the guy's, like, you know, the team cheerleader. But, like, that's not what I feel like I'm here to do. I've worked way too hard. Like, I've came way too far to get here and, like, not play. And I just have, like, a lot of, because I haven't played organized basketball in, like, 3 years. And a lot of people don't know that. But, like, I just have so much, like, built up like anger and stuff like that, where like I'm just ready to get on the court and like show what I've been working on for the last 3 years. So yeah, right now I'm grateful to have this opportunity, and like I said, I'm just working on a lot of things, a lot of small things, working on my jump shot, trying to get stronger, trying to get in shape, just trying to understand the game of basketball a lot more. I'm working on like my defensive technique, so like trying out different defensive stances, like the traditional stance and like the forward stance, which like Michael Jordan and Patrick Beverly use, where you kind of like lean over. It's not like the politically correct stance, but like a lot of top-notch defenders use it. And like using things like chest stops, like being able to stop the ball, like not, because a lot of people, when they get beat, they try to reach. Like just being able to slide in front of the ball and stop the ball with your chest is a big thing. Defense is an art. And I'm not a terrible defender, but like I want to be able to defend my position, because I know if I do make it to the next level, which is professionally, then I mean the guys there, they're playing for, like, they have kids to feed and they have families to feed. So they don't really, like, if you can't defend me, then I'm just gonna give you 40. So yeah, and I'm not trying to be that guy.
Hey, nobody's trying to be that guy. Oh, man. No, that's smart, man. That's intelligent, dude. Not a lot of people, I don't believe, you know what I'm saying, focus that much on defense, as you say, you know, put too much emphasis on it, which they should. Like, offense is cool, too. But, man, to be, like, a two-way player, like, if you could, like, kill offensively, that's incredible. But also play on the other side, like, play defense, too. Like, man, you're even more, you know what I'm saying, sick than anything else. You know, and that's why I give props to, like even LeBron. LeBron plays D. You know what I'm saying? When he has to, man. LeBron, he's a killer offensively, but then he does his thing defensively. And like you said, you mentioned Mike. Man, Michael Jordan, just incredible. And like when he came in the NBA, I don't know if you know, like all they did was talk about his offense, and that said that they said that was the only thing he was an offensive player. Like he couldn't play deep. And you know Mike, man, he just had that competitiveness. And when he heard that, he was like, oh, hell no.
So, like, the average NBA player is 6'7". The average point guard is 6'3". Being 5'10", with a 6'3 wingspan and 40-inch vertical, that helps a little bit. But also, like, I'm just going to have, like, the grit and the brains to like, make up for not being, I mean, an athletic freak or, like, a 1% level athlete.
No, I totally agree, man. That's definitely how the you know the game goes, man. Especially if you're short, yeah, you gotta not necessarily be perfect, but you gotta have something that sticks out. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh man, he's short, but he does this thing very, very, very well, or he does a number of things very well.
After I talked to somebody else, like they basically told me like there's only a handful of superstars, megastars in the NBA. Like most of the guys are good enough to keep a job. So like I started watching those guys, like. Cameron Payne, like guys who aren't like just murdering the NBA, but like they're good enough for like to be in the NBA. So like kind of watch like a little bit of Kyrie. I love James Harden. Like he's unguardable in my personal opinion. I think he's the greatest offensive player of all time. Like a lot of people say Jordan, but I don't see Jordan scoring 60 with 17 assists. That's just James Harden's just on a different level.
That's another debate we can have. that's another podcast.
Stop, pull up before you can even stop your feet and contest. So like that, how do you guard that? Like you really can't. Like you just kind of hope
crazy,
that
he's
kind of hope that like I get there in time, or like he trips or something, or like he just misses the shot, or like helps I, you know, shows up in time. Yeah, he's an animal.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I also watch like Gennaro Pargo, like Jeff Teague, Dennis Schroeder, like those guys who are, they're good, but like they're not superstars, but like they're, you can take something from everybody. Watch Ricky Rubio, he's not really a superstar, but like he's also a point guard.
Those are good guys to study, man. Yeah, there's only a handful of like superstars and things like that, but those are good guys to study under, man. Like Ricky Rubio is one of my favorites too, man. He's ill, dude. Like he knows how to like distribute the ball and just handle the ball and see the floor in a different way. You know, he's pretty ill. I like him.
Yeah,
exactly. His basketball IQ, definitely, man. That's why I try to teach kids too. I'm like, dude, it's not just the physical part of the game.
A lot of people are stuck in
these freaks of nature, 360 doing all this stuff, half court shots, whatever, which is cool. You know what I'm saying? But you have to have the mental part of the game. You have to have that IQ.
But like, I'm not going to be like a Kyrie or a James Harden. Like, I'm going to be a role player, like a Quinn Cook or like a Sean Livingston. So like, I'm going to be a guy that comes in, defends his position, spaces the floor, communicates offense and defense, runs the pick and roll. Like, just being able to do those like small things will like keep me a job in the NBA. And then eventually, I'll be able to like progress into one of those like superstar guys. Like James Harden was kind of like a six man. Like something like that. So like he started out as just like a guy that comes in, plays defense, makes some shots, just kind of, you know, play within the offense. And then now he's became a megastar. So,
right. Yeah. Well, I feel you, man. I mean, I'm glad to hear that about you, man. Like you're, it sounds like you're comfortable with the process. You're not trying to get to the top of the mountain as quickly as possible. I mean, it's nice if you get there as quick as possible. That's cool. But, you know, you realize that things take time and effort, you know, you're saying you're going to come in and defend your position and, you know, God willing, you never know. You could be that superstar one day, but you're willing to start from the bottom before you get to the top, you know, versus trying to get there so quick, you know, and along the way, like, I like that journey. I feel like you got to like the grind because starting from the bottom and taking your time to get to the top, you learn so much in between, you know, that's when you learn. But when you go so fast, you're trying to make it to the top so fast, it's like, you lose the essence, you don't learn too much, and you I feel like you hit a wall quicker than anything else. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, man, being patient, man. Sound like you got your head on straight, man. That's cool, Chris. But yeah, if you listen to the podcast, you better be listening to the podcast, man. You know, I like to hit him with the classic question. I had it for season two. It's the whole microphone question. So I'm gonna hit you with it. Well, I hit all my guests with it, man. I always tell them to be straight up, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to be anything so profound or motivation. It's whatever's in your heart, dude. Just be honest. So here's the question, classic question. Like I said, if you had an imaginary microphone, it's a freaking huge microphone, and whatever Chris says into this microphone, whatever you say, the entire world could hear you, man. Everybody, dog. I'm talking about from any continent, from any city in the world. They could hear you, man, into this microphone. What would you say to the people? You got their attention and everything.
All right. So I'm stuck between two quotes, but I guess I'm just going to go ahead and pick one.
You can hit them with both if you want, man. It's all good.
All right. Well, the first quote would be, fear changes nothing. And then the next quote would be, no excuses, only adjustments.
Ooh, that's smooth. My man said, no excuses, only adjustments. Okay. I'm feeling that one. You got me hyped on that one. No excuse, only adjustments. I'm going to have to snatch that. That's nice. All right. What was the first one that you said? What?
Fear changes nothing.
Ooh, that's okay. I'm feeling that too. Fear changes nothing. All right. That's one of the best, man. I think you got the best one so far this season, dude. I like that. Fear changes nothing. Okay. I got you, man. That's what's up. Fam, let people know where they can find you. You got a Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, man. Let the people know so they can show you some love, man.
All right. So my Instagram is cash_chris10. And then my Snapchat is the same. So cash_chris10.
Okay, so Snapchat and Insta, right?
Yeah, I can't get into Twitter. I'm 19 years old and still don't really know how to post a tweet.
It's all good, man. I'm not a Twitter dude myself. Like, I have it, but I barely freaking use it, man. It's like, I feel like it's for specific people. You know what I'm saying? So it's all good. Don't worry too much about it. You got a YouTube too, you said? Or
Yeah, but I don't really post anything on the YouTube. Like, the YouTube is pretty much only just to get offers.
No, that's what's up, business, man. Use it for whatever you got to use it for. That's what's up, man. But Chris, dog, thank you, man. Thank you. For real, man. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. I thank all my guests, man, because you guys are taking your freaking time. Like, time is something you definitely can't get back. You know what I'm saying? So you could be doing something else and you taking your time. I'm looking at the time right now. We've been talking for over an hour and it's incredible, dude. Like, I appreciate you. You're a young man that has a goal, has dreams, and dude, I'm wishing the best for you. I hope you hit all your goals, man.
I appreciate that.
Keep grinding. People, go show Chris some love, man. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Progressive Being, episode 4. Like I said, go show my man Chris some love on Instagram. And what was the other one? Snapchat. There you go. Yeah, holla at my man on Snapchat, man. And yeah, I get action, man. Thanks for tuning in. Holla at your boy. Peace.